Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I've begun my work on the Tropical House music variations.
Wow.
I love it. All it's taken is a pandemic for the person who's hated Tropical House beats to actually cover it.
I still
hate
it.
Incredible.
It's this is
you're
like
gonna learn to love it, Lindsay.
This is worthy of a tripartite handshake of some sort, right? This is the makings. Lindsay will have a tripartite handshake with the house beats itself and I don't know, some other thing. We need three entities to have a tripartite handshake. So that's so cool.
That is so much fun.
Look, I don't know if I'm really gonna make it a thing, but I had 5 minutes to kill before we started recording this thing, and I thought I'd give it a go.
You gave it a go. It was great.
That only took you 5 minutes?
Yeah, just about.
That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have all kinds of new transition variations and apparently a different opening tune now, or rather the piano, the soft piano cover of Tropical House Beats by Lindsay Sheridan.
Variations on a Tropical House Beats theme. And it'll be like, you know, my first composition since college. So not that I was ever a composer really, but yeah.
Look at you taking up all of these new creative endeavors, like cross stitch, like covering audio jungle tunes.
Yes. That's stellar.
Listener, what ridiculous hobbies have you picked up during the pandemic? Write us. We'd love to hear about them.
We want to know about it. Apparently, this is why you don't watch cable. You're doing way more productive. You're way more productive.
Or reading IJPs.
Independent Journalism Products. Yes. IJPs. Absolutely.
So speaking of wacky pandemic stuff, so I got a weird invite to go audition for a reality TV show.
What?
Called The Social Movement, where they bring together CEOs from across the world to solve the world's biggest problems in 4 days, and they compete with kids. So it's sort of like The Apprentice meets The Voice Junior. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit bummed about that this was the invite, because if it were Undercover Boss, I would totally do it.
Well, you already told us.
Well, no.
We already know.
Imagine if I'm like
why would you tell us if it was Undercover Boss?
Imagine if I like disappeared, right? I was like, hey guys, I got to take PTO for a month. And then like randomly this guy shows up in a costume and it's like, Mac, what are you doing?
I think there's 0% chance that would work.
And it's all on Zoom. It's all in Zoom meetings. You're all just peering in.
In a disguise.
You, it's just you with a white wig and like, yeah, white and a white. You pretty much look like Colonel Sanders.
You know, if some random like kind of guy who looks like me in a mustache shows up as the public ally for next year, you'll know that something's up, especially while it's time for me being on PTO.
That's ludicrous.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, well, no. I like that.
Well,
oh,
good
no.
luck with that audition, David. I mean,
so are you really auditioning for this?
You know, I don't know. It sounds ridiculous, but I mean, almost as ridiculous as us owning an NFT.
I have some remaining questions. Like, in reading that email, it seems like it might be a bit of a pyramid scheme. Like,
oh, of course.
Like, I think you're going to have to pay to be on the show, right?
Oh,
like,
it's no.
Partner. Yeah, a partner.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is this like the weekend and Super Bowl? Like, they got to pay? Like, he had to pay for that?
Yeah, it's
we
like
will
that.
Find out. We will find out. The executive producer and I are going to have a call next week about it.
You're better off being on like the newer version of like Singled Out or something like that. Like that's probably actually more better for our mission if you actually excel than
Singled Out.
this thing. I don't like it. I don't like the vibe. You know, usually like I said last week, I'm down for the story. I'm in, but there's something about this. I don't like it. It doesn't smell right. I don't like it.
Well, Undercover Boss, if you guys are listening, I'm up for it. And our team would
really love
it. It's
already spoiled. It doesn't matter. It's already spoiled. There's no way. There's no way. No way.
David,
you just wait until we get one over on you. When I take off my disguise, Mac, and I'm like, you and the family get to go on a trip to Aruba, because I saw how amazingly you put together these convenings.
David, I think it's endearing that you believe we would behave any differently than we currently do.
Yeah,
without
that's right.
you around.
That's right.
I think what you see is what you get, to be yeah. honest. Like
our new coworker, Mavid Me, shows up. And
he's super curious about how you guys are working on the teams. Yeah. Hey, so Mac, you said you had a couple new segments to pitch?
Yes, that's right. So it's a new segment, listener, called "Serve My Dreams." I think this is culture adjacent. We're culture adjacent, all right? So this is that place, but it's actually work related. So I'm gonna share. This is my dream last night, and I'm gonna share it, and David and Lindsay are gonna interpret it in real time. So just give you some context. It's been a really tough week in the sense of like we just had a lot of convenings. Had a lot of convenings this week that I facilitated over Zoom, and a lot of late nights, and so I haven't slept well. So actually, since yesterday was like the end of sort of like really hectic, I went to sleep at 9. Like that's how tired I was. I just went to sleep at 9 o'clock. Of course, I had to read the team's channel before I went to sleep. Still, I was able, despite how much reading David's updates at 9 p.m. agitate me, and get my mind thinking. I'm like, no, I'm that tired. So I go to sleep. And the way it usually works for me is I sleep and then I kind of wake up, like, you know, like you all do. It's not a full thing. And so I woke up around 3 o'clock and I'm like, oh no, am I off kilter? Cause I went to sleep early and it's my new normal. But no, I got back to sleep finally. So here it is. Get ready. You listener can also interpret my dreams. So I found myself with a group of people I was close to, but I couldn't tell you their names. I couldn't describe who they were. Right. But they were like about 4 or 5 of them. And the way I was reacting to them, like we're in this together. Like there was an urgency. Like we got to do something, guys. Okay, I'm in, let's go. And it became clear to me that the assignment that we were working on together was that we were supposed to sell insurance out of this garage. However, my job was to make pizzas. So everybody else is selling insurance. You know, and like you think of like imagine like a garage, like not like a house garage, but almost like like Joe's garage. Like almost like you could have repaired cars. Like it had like bays. So let me be clear. It was like an auto repair dealership. And so imagine like when you walk into it, there's desks set up as if people are going to meet you to sell you. And so people are sitting up front. But my job in the back, I was like, and what was interesting was like the ingredients were in different parts of the garage. Like there were some in drawers, like there were tomatoes and chores. And I didn't even have a legit oven. I had to like turn on a car and use the heat of the car and like put the pizza in. It made sense in the dream. I put the pizza in the front of the hood. And then not you, or I would say you, just because my teammates would come like, hey, Mac, where's the pizza? I'm like, God, I just put it in. I need time. And it just kind of happened. But yet I wasn't agitated. I was kind of laughing. I'm like, guys, come on. This is ludicrous, right? You realize I've got ingredients. Like, and I pulled like the wrench. Where wrenches and there was like green peppers were coming out. Like, guys, that's what I'm working with. And then they're like, oh, okay, I understand. But occasionally I would keep getting back and then I would hand the pizzas to the people coming back. And so and then I woke up. So there you go. That's my dream. Interpret my dream.
Were we selling auto insurance or just general insurance?
You know, I don't have specifics. I just remember insurance was the phrase. We're selling insurance, guys, but no. But then someone pointed at me but remember you're making the pizzas. And I just remember I said yes to it. I'm like, yeah, okay. Like I wasn't mad. I'm like, yeah, I'm making pizza. So what do you got? What do you got? What do you think my dreams are about?
So clearly you are, you want to work at Northwestern Mutual.
Yes.
In okay. the cafe.
Yes.
And that's your dream. That's your dream job. And you want to leave us and go on to bigger and better things at Northwestern Mutual.
All right, Lindsay, what do you got? What do you got? What's my dream about?
I think.
I mean, I have an inkling of what I think my dream is about, but I want you guys to take a swing at it.
This is definitely a segment from my appearance on Undercover Boss when you take me aside and like and like share your soul with me, and I understand something very deep about your experience at work.
I think I may have lost it at the end of the week now, so we'll see if I can get through without laughing. Let's see. I think that it probably speaks to the fear of like getting through work that you might feel discomfort around.
Yeah.
Like you're not the front line, you're not the shiny salesman.
Right.
You're the behind the scenes pizza maker.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty similar to actually your work here. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure like what it says. I think you were stressed about making the pizza and you had not the exact tools that you needed to make the pizza. Like it was forging a new path of pizza making in cars. So
I'll have to say, again, I think these are good interpretations. I think the thing that struck me the most was I wasn't really mad. Like, you know, like it wasn't like I wasn't agitated. Like I'm angry at my situation. I was like, there was like I was agitated from like exhilaration. Like, how do I make a pizza getting food out of random parts of this garage? Obviously in not a sanitary way, but I was still up for the challenge. Like, I'm going to figure out how to make this pizza. I got to heat up this car and then I'll put this pizza in it. So, and we made pizza. Like, I handed it to somebody and they took it and they were happy. Like,
I feel like we as a whole are the pizza makers. So then I'm not sure who that makes the insurance salesman actually.
So we're all making pizza.
Yeah. I think Imagine is the pizza makers.
Great.
Maybe it's just Mac though. I don't know.
Well, everybody, thanks for taking the time for letting me just at least put it out, putting words to it. Cause then I can let it go and it's not sitting inside me, and I hope I never have that dream again. So that was the bit, interpret my dreams. And David and Lindsay, in future weeks, you're welcome to interpret. And you listening, feel free to tweet at us or at us, or maybe recommend a therapist, because maybe it's triggering some stuff for you. And you're like, you better talk to somebody. I'm open to that. And I think we had the benefits that I could probably offset the costs. All right. And before we get to our guests, I want to do one more segment. And I call it, the segment's called Those Effing Jerks Stole Our Bit. Those Effing Jerks Stole Our Bit. And what I'm referring to is the Bloomberg article, which reports that our good friend Kevin Roos, he's not my friend, but I like his stuff. Journalist Kevin Roos, technology journalist,
does not have an IJP.
He doesn't have an independent, because you know why? Because he works
traditional media.
He works for Trad JP. He works for Trad. So he works for the New York Times. Writes for the New York Times about tech. He wrote an article about NFTs, and then he turned it into an NFT. It was auctioned off in the open market with the proceeds going to the newspaper's Neediest Cases Fund. $560,000 it got sold for. So,
wow.
We've been talking about NFTs. In fact, our guest today will be referring to it. But I just wanted to say that is Those Effing Jerks Stole Our Bit.
Comments or questions, y'all? For half a million dollars.
Yeah, comments or questions.
The article sold for $500,000. That's incredible.
The NFT of the article.
Right.
That was about NFTs. Yep.
Right.
Sold for $560,000.
Wow. Right. He stole our bit. I mean, he made
that,
a thing
that effing
out of
guy stole
that,
our bit.
Yeah,
that effing guy stole our bit. Lindsay, any reactions or anything to stimulate pitchforks and torches from our many downloaders?
I mean, we really should have created an NFT out of our murals, is what I'm hearing. Like, this guy took his own work, turned it into an NFT.
Well, I think the answer is, could we have minted an NFT of like a blog post or like a set of emails or something?
Yeah, sure. But we're not the New York Times, so that would go for about $2. And
we would have lost $80 on the minting fees. That's right.
We should have made an NFT about us talking about making an NFT on the pod.
That's right. We could have made a NFT from
our podcast.
That would have been a lot of money, though, right?
Because it's the pod's like, 100 megabyte feed or something? And then that's a massive amount of money. All right. Well, anyway, that's a little bit of a segue, because we are actually going to have an artist as a guest today. We're excited to have David Najib Kassir, who is a contemporary oil painter living and working in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. His work is comprised of personal narrative and surrounds the act of coming to terms with the challenges of family, life, love, and loss. He's a tremendous artist, but he's also one of the artists. He's the artist we're working with on this NFT. So we thought, let's keep the role going by having him not just talk about that story, but also talk about how he's been creating during the pandemic, and perhaps what is life for artists, perhaps as we come out to a new normal. After the break, David Najib Kassir.
David, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. You know, super. This has been a little bit of a long week. Glad to be on the other side of it. And I said at the beginning of the week, if we can see David's face, that means we survived. And so now you're here. So we survived.
We made it.
I feel like that was the that's what helped a lot of people get through this whole pandemic. one day.
If we can just see David's face, we'll have survived.
Yeah, I feel like I believe Biden said that yesterday in the.
that was part. That's why he waited for the press conference. He wanted to wait. Yeah,
he's like, let's we. He said it for his first 100 days in office. This is what he. We just, to, you know, if we just walk through these steps, eventually we'll be able to see David Najib Kassir's face.
Then they unfolded this big wall that had your face on it. Like, right. It was like, boom.
Make America
something
good.
Something again. Something again.
Make America good at storing value in NFTs, apparently. We are so glad that you have joined us today to talk a little bit more about this crazy time we're in, and also to reflect and review. I mean, the last time we saw you was definitely, I think, at that meeting right before everything went crazy with COVID. So we are super excited that you're here. We're super excited that you made that sculpture. Epstein was murdered. That now we made into this thing. But we definitely wanted to catch up on other stuff. So thanks for joining us today. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for having me.
Yeah,
and I don't kind of remember that. It seems so long ago. Like there's some like what happened like before.
Yeah.
We live in, but I don't really remember all that.
I think you and a lot of people probably don't remember that time.
So David, thanks again for joining. It's great to connect with you again, and definitely in full transparency. It's also the day after NBA trade day. And so it's been a good day for both of us, right? It's been a good day. And now we're not going to do a deep dive in here, but we want to acknowledge that's in the room, right? This is in the room with us, right?
I think we could do a deep dive. I'm excited. You got to talk to me about this.
Yes. So we'll save it for later, right? We'll talk about it later, and we may do it as an Easter egg. But I just wanted to name David. What's real is it's been a good day. It was like waking up after Christmas. It was like the day after Christmas, and like I can't wait. I can't wait for this to happen. So that's what I feel and wanted to name.
That was a total surprise. I was not expecting. It was really nice.
And for our listeners that are listening, it's the fact that the Bulls traded for Nikola Vucevic and Freak Amin and punted a bunch of talent and picks, but whatever. We'll get to that maybe and later. We'll get to that later. But
a friend of mine did see that I was really happy about it, and he was upset that I was happy about it. And I do, because he just thinks I'm just a big Bucks fan, and that's it. I do support Bucks.
Okay.
That I'm just waiting for my Bulls to give me something more to support. I mean, the Bulls are going to be the number 8 seed, maybe, or the 7th. They're not going to win the championship.
Right.
I want them to do well, but if they're in this series with the Bucks, I need the Bucks to win because they have more potential to win the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, and that also makes you a great resident of Milwaukee. I would say,
unlike you, Mac,
I'm pro Bulls, and at best, I'm neutral Bucks. Like, I don't want them to fall into a hole, like a sewer. You know, like, you can live. You know, like, I'm neutral Bucks. I don't want to be, I'm not pro Bucks. I'm just like, I hope they're okay. It's fine.
My stance next year might be completely different.
Okay,
though.
So like, it might shift.
It'll be, because like, that's the whole year where we'll have like, where the Bulls can concentrate on being something.
Stay tuned a little bit later, because me and Dave are going to break down trade deadline day and maybe talk about
this
what
we're
going to
do. This is going to turn into a sports podcast.
Yeah, I don't know about other sports. I just know I grew up in the 90s in Chicago.
I can hear, what neighborhood did you grow up in?
We lived in the city, and then eventually we moved out into the suburbs from Northburg to Arlington Heights.
North Burbs. I was South Side, Palos Hills, Southwest, but my parents met in Lincoln Park, and then they moved out to the suburbs so the kids could go to a good school. And I was like, God, it too bad you didn't hold on to that property in Lincoln Park. It changed in 30 years. Things changed.
I was just there on a Saturday. Yeah, Saturday.
So speaking of that, David, what is a arts or cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you? It doesn't have to be from back in the day. It could be recently, but is there something that left a strong imprint on you?
Something very recently. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was in Chicago, and I went to the Art Institute in Chicago, and they have a Bisa Butler exhibit. Mm-hmm. And Bisa Butler... is this artist who does sort of like fabric weaving type of, and I've been a fan for like maybe I've known of her for almost 2 years or a year and a half or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think the show opened in around my birthday in November, and I was going to go, but then I ended up having COVID, and then and then they closed down because of COVID. Not because of my COVID, though. but they closed.
It's plausible, though, because you wanted to see your face. So it's plausible that you might have like, hey, we got to see David at the end of this thing. We got to see David at the end of this thing. It might have been your COVID.
I'll tell you this. The week the whole shutdown happened, 1 year ago, my friend and I were going to drive down to Michigan. Howard Liu and I were going to go drive down to Michigan to go see a David Park exhibit. And David Park is this, like, you know, Bay City artist from the 50s and 60s, and who I believe to be, like, one of the best painters ever. And I've never seen his work, and I've been a huge fan for so many years. And just as I was going to go down there, they... you know, the world shut down that day. And so, like, when it happened with Bista again, I'm like, oh, here we go again, you know? And my friend joked, don't stop planning on going to see art. Maybe.
Is there like a watch? Like they watch your house or they look at your feed. It's like, gonna go see art. And they like, just,
what's David up to? Right.
They send a team out there to stop you from going outside.
Well, you know, I am Arab, and I do hear that they do sort of like, you know, see everything we you know, our phones and stuff. So I'm sure I'm being monitored.
Yeah, you're tagged.
I'm sure they are monitoring, but at this point, they're just appreciating the terrible jokes I make. doesn't have any bombs or anything like that. We'll just keep monitoring because he's hilarious.
Yeah, let's keep him around.
Yeah.
Let's just assign it to the intern. Like, he'll track. He'll be fine.
As I was saying, though, that Beast of Butler exhibit was, I just did not want to leave the museum. It was, I was there with a friend and my daughter, and they, you know, I think after a while they're like, come on, we have to go. And the show was just so, I mean, so much detail and the colors and wow. There's so much power to what she does. You know, and there are these African American figures, and they're very, you know, their life size are larger, and it's the way these sort of like it's sort of like their gaze on you too, you know. Mm-hmm. So as you're viewing them, they're viewing you, and it's just this like powerful like kind of moment in that space. So I don't have as much of those sort of experiences as I would love, but man, that was an experience. I would tell everybody to go see that show.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. We will definitely link to the exhibit in the show notes. But just wanted to pick up on something you just said just now, which is, you know, the experience of experiencing their gaze. And I was sort of reminded of a lot of your work, right, is of figures that are faceless, right? And also just this, you know, I'll share like my initial experience with your work is just incredible geometry, incredible shapes, and these faceless figures. But yet you still are able to evoke that sense of like family, of care, despite the fact that there is no face, which I think is fascinating. Can you talk a little bit more about like how that sort of a style kind of evolved for you?
Well, at first I was sort of hesitant to put any sort of color or anything on their face. I felt like if I were to be, because the figures are Arab, in what I'm representing. And I was sort of, I felt if I were to make them, give them more air features, I felt like because of the country we live in and sort of the narrative that has been held up for all my life, that I felt like they if they were distinctly Arab, the audience would dismiss them. Mm. And I didn't want that. But it took me some time to, you know, I do start putting on, you know, in the last couple of years where I would use skin color, you know, in darker tones, and where I would sort of, you know, represent it more. But I do it in my way.
Yeah.
But yeah, my first initial thought was I was afraid audiences would dismiss him just because, I mean, I grew up, you know, during the time where you would hear so many dismissive things against us. Hmm.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Mac.
Well, I was thinking about that series. I think you're talking about the series of when I was reviewing some pieces, and I think the ratio of percents and ghosts was part of that series you're talking about, David, I think, in terms of the faceless, right? And I think at the same time, the facelessness also, and for me, like, there's almost a universality in it for me, right? Like, that, like, I'm invited in a way, like, maybe achieve what you talked about. Like, I was brought into the piece because in some ways I wanted to see the face, if that means, like, I was like leaning in a little bit more to see
right.
what it was. Hmm. And at least in that piece, to me, is haunting. Obviously, I imagine it's from a haunting, you know, what it was inspired was haunting, but it did achieve the effect of both being haunting, but also the use of the color made it almost seem bright and holy in another way. So, like, these things were happening for me, you know, David, as you said, I was like, I was literally thinking of, like, that piece. You know, I was like, that was the first piece you had mentioned. And anyways, I think when you talk about dismissing, it's like, yeah, anyways, for me, it had the opposite effect. It just sort of drew me in, and almost like that must be a window somewhere.
Well, I mean,
shining through it. And
almost, I mean, though, like a light. Thank you. The purpose originally was to sort of have people identify with the figure, and sort of like where, you know, I would get messages like, you know, talking about that mural, I would get messages from people who would, you know, say like, you know, when they see that figure, you know, they see their mother or they see the child. And they don't have the same experiences, but they have an understanding of who that is.
Yeah.
And they can understand that mother might be burdened and exhausted, but understanding that that person would walk hundreds of miles carrying that, you know, her child in the same situation, if that's what he was put in.
Yeah.
So it's all about identifying with, you know, between the viewer and the figure, as an understanding, like having an understanding between the two.
Yeah.
No, and not, you know, changing the narrative of who we are as Arabs and you know, all the negative that this, you know, stereotypes have sort of built.
So this last year, I mean, we were talking about a little bit in the open, we haven't seen you in about a year. We've been in this sort of like Zoom space for the last 365 plus days. And as we know, COVID has been really tough for artists and creatives, just generally speaking. How has it treated you? What have you been up to this last year, other than dealing with your own little bout of COVID? How has this last year been for you?
Well, I mean, I'm a very social person, so it's not it's not
not good.
I was just sort of you know, you have a certain way of life that you're just sort of used to, and then for you know, for you to be forced to sort of live isolated was, you know, was not easy for me. You know, I really enjoy being around other people. I have lots of friends. I enjoy their company. You know, I remember at one point where I was texting something to my friend, and she was confused if I was joking, and even I was confused if I was joking, because I don't even know what was funny anymore. It was just sort of, you know, it hit in so many areas where everything felt uncomfortable. If I didn't see people, you know, I went to my studio every day during it just to feel somewhat normal and work. I mean, there's nothing else to do. But I have these windows, these prominent windows in my studio, and outside is Nash. I'm on National and Fifth over here, and it's a pretty, you know, lively sort of neighborhood.
Yeah.
And when it first hit, it was just so bare outside, so dead. You know, there weren't many cars outside. It was just, you know, and the skies were so gray, and it just, you felt it. It felt very, a whole new sort of world, a dark sort of environment. And that sort of just sort of feeds into you, and it's hard to get out of that.
Have you felt that that's sort of affected your work over the last year? I mean, now, particularly now that we're sort of getting towards the end of it, as we're sort of getting to that, you know, end light at the end of the tunnel, has your work changed?
You know, I think, I'm sure it must have had an effect on my work. You know, I look and see certain things, but I think within more time, I'll see more of like, you know, where my headspace was at. You know, I mean, we're still in it. Like, you know, we haven't fully integrated into society yet, you know, hopefully in the summer or something like that. And I mean, there's a lot of trauma in going through what we have gone through here, that we're not even aware of, you know? So I think within time that sort of, you know, we'll be able to see certain things, and, or I'll see certain images or colors used, and it'll be like, well, yeah, now that feels appropriate for how I was feeling at that moment, or that image seems about right. I think that ratio piece that you were mentioning earlier, that I made that during this whole thing. And I mean, I've made a lot of works during this last year. And knowing which piece I had to remember which piece that was, because I've made so many, but remembering that felt about right, or what that image is.
So what you're saying is that the ratio of percents in ghosts, that really does capture a time for you, right? Like where you were in that moment at the time of this.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like something that that's at that time we were still taking note of death count.
Yeah,
You know, it's sort of ridiculous how like nobody talks about death count anymore. But
yeah,
at that time it was still, you know, we were all still very aware of it, and I think during that piece, I was probably very aware of it.
You said you went to the studio every day because you had to work, right? Like a sense of rhythm, a sense of routine, and a sense of staying grounded. What was new for you? Was there any sort of things that emerged that was new for you as a result of even trying to get routineness? There's a sort of, there's something you discovered or something that surprised you as you try to keep going at it?
I guess, I mean, what was new to me, like I was saying earlier, I guess I didn't realize just how depending I am on interactions with others, you know, how social I am. That was very new to me, being aware of it. Yeah, I went in and worked every day, but it was a forced work. You know, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I was, you know, I went through the first couple of months without seeing anybody, not seeing two daughters for several months or any family members. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think there's a whole sort of, you know, questioning of identity and, you know, who we made of ourselves in normal life. And what does that all sort of mean at that present moment? You know, I think I was, whether I knew it or not, I was probably questioning who was that person and who the person is right now. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I know we could spend all day talking about all of your oil paintings because it's just incredible, right? Your portfolio, as I've shared with you, like I can get totally lost in with just, again, all the shapes, colors, and just everything. But one of the reasons why we have you here is to talk about this rise of digital art and non-fungible tokens. And of course, you are the owner of you are the creator of our NFT that's on Rarible right now, Epstein Was Murdered, which unfortunately, David, I hate to share with you that Ether has gone down these last few days. So it's the buy it now price is 32,000 as opposed to 35.
I had it at 35. Is that what I had?
You had priced the original sculpture at 35. That's right.
I felt that's reasonable.
I think it is really reasonable.
We did too.
We still do, and we will, because it's going to come back. It's going to bounce back.
So I did that at, during one of our meetings, right?
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of pay attention, my way of paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just like kind of drawing or putting things together.
Yeah.
And I think at that time you had some little knickknacks on the table, and
yeah,
I was goofing around, and you know, with my humor and stuff, I'll give it an absurd title and a reasonable price.
Very reasonable price. Yeah, I mean, everything about the thing was whimsical, but the price. Obviously, the title not as whimsical, but you know, the price is serious. You're dead serious about the price.
The documentary I watched not long after that, during the whole shutdown, on the guy, and then I was like, and then after watching, I'm like, maybe he was murdered.
Maybe I was onto something. You know what I love about that title though, David, is that, you know, COVID is blowing up at that moment, right? March 11th, right? Everything is like, you know, are we going to have work next week? Like, who knows, right? And there you are in our meeting, us stupid idiots, right, at the library having a meeting with like 10 people, not socially distanced. And like your fidget sculpture is titled Epstein Was Murdered, not COVID Is Coming, you know, or whatever.
Or the NBA is closing today. Or today's the NBA's last day today or something like that, right?
You know, it's funny because like that, first of all, we didn't know what social distancing really is, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny, like we heard, you know, they would bring it up in talking points at that time, but we didn't really, I mean, it just sounded so abstract to us,
yeah.
You know, in the way of living and the way we have been in the last year, it just sounded, if you were to like sort of really, you know, sit us down at that time and tell us how we're going to interact or, you know, even through Zooms and stuff like that, it would just sound so abstract to us. We'd just be like,
You're like, I know what all those words mean.
Yeah.
And I know the sentence construction, but I don't know what that feels like or what that is. Right. Like
it sounds so absurd. why would we even be like that? You know, but we've never lived through sort of like a, you know, we've never experienced a global pandemic or sure, really have that sort of, you know, definition in our heads of what that means.
Right.
And so, we are probably very careless, but what do we know about being careless? Yeah. You know, You know, and I'm sure, you know what, I did see this photo that, you know, you have one of those like apps that showed you what you posted a year
right.
ago.
Yeah, right.
And a couple of weeks ago, and I guess this was just like, just either before or right after the shutdown. But I had a mask on because I was doing something in my studio. Oh. And at that time, they were talking about masks, I think, on the news. Mm-hmm. But I took a, you know, selfie of me with the masks, and I posted something that said something like, felt cute, might get sick and die later. It's, you know, that's just my bad sense of humor.
That's almost a little too close,
yeah,
right?
A little too close.
And then, as the things got more serious, I'm like, oh, well, maybe that, you know, maybe that's a little too, that's not appropriate. To fire you. But then when I got COVID, I'm like, oh, they're going to talk a lot of that shit at my
computer. Where is his mask now?
Seriously, he was making these posts about dying.
Oh, man. Of course,
he had it coming.
Oh, man.
So when we decided to go on this podcast project of making an NFT, we had a little internal debate as to what digital product or what digital art in our world that we would choose to mint as our first NFT. And yours, clearly, because of the time it was made and sort of like where it was made, yours was the first one that came to our mind. I don't know if you've been following any of this stuff. Do you have any takes on like this whole thing about non-fungible tokens, the rise of digital art, and all of like what this might mean for artists like you or digital artists or anybody else?
Well, it can be good for artists like me, right? I need you guys to buy these paintings.
Good old-fashioned way, right?
Here's
good
the thing, David. Yeah. If we take pictures of them, we can make NFTs out of them, apparently.
It's just such an absurd thing. Like, it just, like, and I'm not trying to, well, I guess I am.
Yeah,
but, it's like, that sounds like America, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just such a, it's so absurd, and it's just, I think it sounds like something where, like, you know, people got bored and then just created this whole like other way of thinking. That's not, you know, I feel like it doesn't feel valid at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I don't know. That's, I guess I don't know too much about it, but it seems ridiculous in my opinion. I just don't understand why you pay for something that you have but don't have.
That's interesting.
Is that about right though?
You know, David, I'd, if you have 45 minutes, I'd love to talk to you about timeshares in that you might be interested here in Cancun. I'd love to talk to you about place you have access to for 8 days of the year. You don't own it, but you have access to it for 8 days of the year. Just have to coordinate with the other folks who have access to days.
You know, and it's funny because like it's all these certain, like, yeah, that or these other things. And then you're like, why are people paying more attention to this than like real problem? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You know, nobody's talking about the number of deaths, but people are talking about, you know, this absurd new way to buy, you know, art, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
When I think about it too much, it just, I go a little nuts, or I just probably spend too much time crying. Probably. Yeah.
One of the two, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, David, I went through like, I think the five stages of grief when the story happened. At first it was like, I was like, this is so depressing. Mac had shared with me an article about about NBA Top Shot. I don't know if you've heard of this. This is like where the NBA has like are selling packs of highlights as NFTs.
They're partnering. They're partnering with a vendor who's doing this.
Right. Not,
the NBA couldn't do this on their own. They're just
so thousands of dollars for highlights, right? So whether it's like, you know, a dunk or like a pass or whatever, right? Like, it's incredible. And I was just like, really? Like, we don't have more, we don't have better things to do with our time, treasure, and talent than to do this. And then like week over week, I think Max saw this. Like, I went from like totally depressed about this and being like to a point of like, we're going to own an NFT, right? I'm going to accept that this is our brave new world and we're going to understand how this works. And if we can get David paid, we will do it.
Yeah. So
I
yeah, you're like, you're on board for that. You're like, I'm in for the experiment. I'm in for the story. Like, I'm with you. I think what happened was David would keep sharing with us articles about NFTs and I'd be like, sure, David, sounds great. Let me know how it goes. I think to your point, I just don't have the bandwidth to want to deal with it, right? Like, it's just like this thing, but yeah.
Other things going on, you know, it's just like, and especially, and you know, I would see these things that would take up news space and I'd be like, you know, and this is even before this, I'd be like, well, there's still Syria going on. Mm. You know, there's still, all these, you know, like, you know, what happened in Beirut over the summer or all these other things. And yet we sort of concentrate on these sort of trivial sort of absurdities, you know. I don't know. I'm a guy who jokes around a lot and I give me all the bad jokes. I live off of that. But I'm also trying to pay attention to, you know, the things that matter and help us move on. Yeah. You know, I mean, especially during election cycles, you know, where that's part of the game, you know, some terrible thing just happened. Well, let's make sure that they don't really see it and change the conversation to something dumb, like cancer culture or something like that, you know, some absurd Dr. Seuss thing that it doesn't do anything to anybody really, but it's a talking point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes when it comes to this stuff, I feel like, I just imagine like if aliens monitoring, you know, the country or like if one they're undercover, you know, and they're just kind of like seeing what's important to what everybody's talking about at the moment. And they were like, you know, I'm sure they'd be shaking their heads. I need to go back to, you know, Dimension 5 or whatever.
Get a new assignment. I want to follow a different cult. I would rather follow a different civilization.
People are useless. They have nothing good for us.
Well, that's my feeling about aliens, right? Visiting us, right? It's like if they would come and like they take one look at us and be like, you know, there's probably
nothing
other
to fear here,
we
guys. We're good. Nothing to fear here.
I mean, all they would do is turn on the TV. They would. I mean, the biggest thing on TV now is reality TV. Nothing shows. I don't know if there's a better indicator of the intelligence of us in this planet or this country, especially, than reality TV. It's just mindless. It's just, you know, it's just dumb. And it's just, you know, I think, you know, when you look at politics and how they talk to each other now, you know, the discourse is completely different than it was 20 years ago.
Right.
And probably the part of that is because of the discourse you find on reality TV, the way they talk to each other, the terribleness and attitudes. And I think because people get confused as the title reality, they think, well, no, that's real. That's how people talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So when they see politicians engaging in that way now, they're like, well, no, that's normal now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But not, you know, I don't know. I'm going
out. What you're saying is that if I had the opportunity to audition and be on a reality TV show, I shouldn't do it. Not even if it's Undercover Boss, so I could catch up on how Mac and the rest of the team are,
well, I mean,
are performing at work.
Let me tell you this. Let me help you out. I'll save you some. They all say terrible things about you.
Yes.
He's not. No comment. He's not wrong. Yeah. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. So
I'm on some of those group chats. It's weird. I'm like, sorry, guys. He's not. Yeah, exactly.
And why are you putting me on these group chats, guys? Yeah. I don't get it. Why are you bringing me on these?
I don't know why I'm on the group chat.
Why am I on the group chat? So, you know, I think one of the things has been sort of hailed as a possibility, right? That, oh, this is a way for artists to have a little bit more control. And again, I think one offering that considering is like, maybe not, right? Or this is a bit ludicrous. Let's pivot to what would, right? And let's, you know, as we're kind of heading out, ideally, as we're heading out of this pandemic, right? And again, will we ever get out? I don't know, right? But we have the opportunity to hopefully craft something new, potentially, right? And so I'd be, from your perspective, and again, maybe thinking about Milwaukee, what would go a long way towards making sure it's a lot better for artists to create? You know, it's a bit of like pass some laws or what do you even think that would go a long way towards making sure that someone like you could thrive as a creator, an artist?
You know, it's interesting that, you know, Imagine MKE was sort of being built and taking off just before this whole thing happened. So it'd be interesting to see what the organization does for the community. I've been in Milwaukee for, you know, 20 years or so. And there's such a instability in the art scene, you know, in that time where, you know, it would feel like it'd be becoming something one moment and then it would die off the next. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's all like, you know, ebb and flow and, you know, and waves. But in the last couple of years, it really feels like something has been been built up, you know, like there's been momentum, you know, the scene and like all these different scenes were working together, you know, holding each other up. I mean, that's one thing that I think, you know, we sort of, the art community has over here since I've been here is that, you know, we all sort of support each other artistically. You know, there are artists I went to school with and we're all, till this day, you know, 100% behind each other.
That
I don't know if you have in other art communities in other cities, but, you know, it felt like we were on such a momentum here in Milwaukee, and I do sort of worry about what happens post, you know, shutdown life. Mm-hmm. Do we go back? Do we go? You know, I don't want to go back. I don't want the scene to feel bare again. That was that wasn't easy times for. You know, people like myself, other creators, but, or do we just pick up right where we started from or left off from? You know, I mean, over here at Vard, you know, I'm associated with Vard Gallery and Josh Hintz. And, you know, we had, a, you know, I know he was concerned, you know, in the beginning of this and what, you know, how this, what would happen with the space and the studios and if it was going to be able to survive shutdown life. I mean, all these galleries, I'm sure, had to worry about, you know, the idea of just existing just as much as any restaurant or business out there. So, and you know, there are going to be a few that don't survive it, but I don't know. We'll have to see. It is scary for a scene that was just sort of starting to feel like it was really on an upswing and could stay on an upswing, you know, not just sort of, you know, flow right back down. Because it felt like the upswing was lasting longer than others have. It'd be interesting to see what happens. I'm we're all hopeful.
Yeah. I definitely think that the what the DNC could have been was you'd have this influx of many people coming through physically to see, witness it in real time, to see the pieces up and to see.
Right.
And then they'd take that back home. Like, wow, that's what I saw. And that could help keep that wave going, right? Because I think what it says, like, it's clear to people here, there's something here. There's something about outside too that to help affirm, bring those dollars in, if you will, or those eyeballs in, or that attention, right? There's somebody had to bring that back somehow.
I was supposed to be participating in the whole DNC and my work in that, and hopefully I was going to meet AOC and we were going to get married. But I mean, that was my plan.
Wait, something's come up on the track in the phone. Something's come up. Sorry, I just got pinged on something.
That's a much different outcome for you, David, from the meeting AOC, getting married, and living happily ever after, and just working in your studio, getting COVID, and talking to us.
Right? This is the darkest timeline, David. This is the darkest timeline.
The thing is that you have to stay positive. You need any sort of thing you can kind of like just hold on to and hope for. You got to use it. You got to use it. Me and AOC.
Shoot your shot.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot your shot.
Yeah. Actually,
sorry. Go ahead.
When the riot happened, my first thought was like, I hope she's okay. You know?
That was your first joke.
That was your first thought.
That's no joke. She'd be number one, right? She would be number one.
Top five, probably.
Oh no! She'd be at least. No, she would be number one. I think the other parties. Really afraid of her.
Yeah, they are, because really she speaks afraid. A lot of truth, man. She speaks.
The speaker was really. You think? AOC, I mean, she was top of the list.
I think you're right, though. I think they would want to get her. They would.
Yeah.
That group of people. They would.
Right. Yeah. And she does speak. You know, she is very vocal, and how honest she is. I mean, that's sort of the backbone between our relationship between her and I.
Well, I'm glad we're breaking it on this pod. It's important we need to break the big stories on this pod.
Right?
Okay.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking some time out of your Friday to spend with us. And like I said, I'm so glad to have been able to see you, because, you know, being able to see your face means that we made it through the week. where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram, David Najib Kassir. I post a lot of my work over there. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter. I don't really tweet that often, but every once in a while I'll make a terrible joke. And that's where you can find me, or come visit me in Walker's Point.
Awesome.
I can't wait to come out and be able to see you and give you a hug and actually be back in real life together.
Yeah, you should come by the studio. I'll do one of those blind contours of you.
Oh, have you seen our blind contours? We did blind contours. Mac made us do blind contours in a staff meeting, and they're absolutely terrible. So,
I do one every once in a while. I really kind of like, it's nice exercise. It's just like I do it, and then I try to save it with watercolor paint, and it's how much I can make it look like them and how absurd it'll look. It's fun.
Great to reconnect with David.
Did you know that he was the he's the longest running work group meeting attendee? He's attended the most work group meetings going back, I think, into the planning process and into the pre staff process. He's
great.
The most work group meetings. Apparently has got the hottest takes on all the Bulls roster changes.
Yeah, that was too hot for radio. We couldn't put it on, but maybe that's a side pod that we'll do. There's a small Venn diagram that overlaps where it's Bulls fans and arts and culture people in Milwaukee. It's a very small and lonely intersection of the Venn diagram, which apparently it's just our two heads are in that. You know, I think I really appreciate, you know, when I reflect on talking with David, it's just, you know, hopeful that you know, because I think he was very clear about, and I've seen other articles about this sort of NFT thing, how, you know, it might be a Ponzi scheme, right? And, you know, I know we're sort of exploring it just to try to, like, to your point, understand it better, right? Like, I don't know if we have any, it's too early to tell if this is going to be a game changer, but I think what I get from David is sort of a caution of how do we make sure we, you know, new things may come up, but how do we still keep our eyes on what's most important in front of us?
Yeah, you know, and if I can bring in something from this last week, kind of building on that, right? Like we did a mapping exercise with some of our work group co-chairs, and there were two sections of a diagram. You know, systems that will create the outcomes we want, and also systems that will not create or will create the outcomes we don't want.
Right.
And it was funny that NFTs and cryptocurrencies sort of fell on both sides, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I think it is an interesting new way of authenticating ownership and creating a trackable way of assigning royalties and paying royalties, right? Because of its being built on the blockchain. But then in the near term, like, there's just so much, right, that we don't know about it, and how, like, the rush of almost prospectors going into the field may create strange outcomes. By the way, it was also just really lovely to talk to David about just his work and painters that he loves and to sort of experience a little bit. Re-experience his unique sense of humor and way of being. It was just a really fun time.
Yeah. And you know who I like being with?
Our listeners.
Yes, they're the best. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Imagine This Podcast. And please keep supporting the podcast. I love that the audience keeps growing steadily and growing. That means it's getting out there. Keep sharing it with others and post about it on social media. Leave a rating and review or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you listen and subscribe to Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, you can hit us up at Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE or Facebook @justimaginemke. And if you come to the website, sign up to be an arts champion and you'll get the amplifier every 2 weeks, which we highlight directly in your inbox what's most important in arts and culture in Milwaukee.
Thanks again, and we'll catch you next Tuesday when Jenny Grob and Laura Solomon from Woodland Pattern join us. See you then.